From the Paley Center for Media in New York, this is Max Media. Here's Max Robbins.
Hi, everybody. Max Robbins here, Max Media. I'm here with Mr. Andrew Tindall of the Tindall Report. Believe it or not, this guy has probably watched every single evening newscast for the last 20 years or more. I know that sounds incredible, but...
I have watched.
You have watched that. Thank you. And I will tell you this. I've known Andrew almost that long, and this gentleman probably knows more than anyone I know about the whole business and content of what goes on in network news. TindallReport.com, what you're doing there, and basically what you are, you're kind of like curating the nightly newscast. You're saying, I'm going to each night, I'm going to choose the real quality here and put a newscast together for you. I mean, that's one of the things you're doing besides having this searchable database.
Yes, exactly. So what I'm doing is, I'm doing the two things. One, I'm logging it so that if you want to look at anything, you can. But also, I'm picking it. And I'm saying, I've watched these newscasts.
As the guy who's watched every newscast for the last 21 years.
And I know all the tricks they get up to. I know all the sleights of hands and the fudging and when they didn't actually send the correspondent out into the field but did a voiceover. And I can notice them and I can see them. And I can see when someone's actually done the work and delivered. And I can say, that is a good story. And I can say, well, that one was a little bit subpar.
Well, you're a watchdog as much as a researcher.
Absolutely. I do both. I give the resource whereby you can search for what you're interested in. But every day, I take the 3 half-hour newscasts of the three networks, and I come up with my picks. I call them my picks, which is, if you wanted to make the best newscast out of those three, I'll give you the 10 stories to watch. So each story is 2 minutes long, roughly. So you can spend half an hour, go to my site, you can watch a half-hour newscast that I've made up for you, and you can get the fully rounded picture of the day's news, slanted towards, and mostly whenever they do overseas coverage, I include that in my picks, because I think it's more important to get overseas coverage than not. So even though they're each of the individual newscasts is cutting down, if I include all of the overseas coverage in my picks, you're going to get the best political coverage, the best overseas coverage, and I'm going to basically give low attention to the human interest soft features.
And I'm the little kid who fell into the well.
It's absolutely. I'm going to try and find you where the actual news is online.
Now, you've been at this about 2 years with your revamped Tindall Report.
Yes.
What's the traffic like? How you doing?
Well, it looks like many, many people are using it for the search facility to look up stuff that what they're interested in. So every time you do a search on my site, I assemble a grid of potential videos that you can choose from, and you can read down the list and you can click on them and see the actual story. I'm getting 100,000 grids generated each month by my viewers.
Wow. So you think this is going to be a real business?
I think it's got to get to a million in a month to be a real business. But we're on our way. And you know what? Hopefully publicity from the likes of the Paley Center is going to drive business up to astronomical heights, viral heights even.
One can only hope. At any rate, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Max.
Andrew, it is truly a pleasure. This is actually part of a tradition. I just remembered before when you were coming in today that my first column for TV Guide, back in the old days of the Robbins Report there, the first column was based on some research of yours. Of course, I have no idea what it was about, but it was a long time ago.
But it was incredibly accurate research.
The research was impeccable. The column, I'm not so sure. Well, flash forward to where we are today, and we just had, to say the least, an historic election. It was, and I think it was historic in many ways for the media that covered it. And what I was wondering about, I mean, since you really had put a laser on those three broadcast network evening newscasts, what you saw as the role that they really played and how that might have been different than in elections past, how they shaped it.
Yeah, there's three really important points to be made about the election of 2008. First, as I've been watching all the news for the last 20 years, the first really prominent thing is that it was a much more newsworthy election. It just got a lot more coverage. It got head and shoulders more coverage. It, compared to some of the election cycles in the last 20 years, it got double the amount of news. So it really was an historic newsmaking election.
I mean, if you were talking about Bush-Kerry or Bush-Gore, what? Twice as much?
Yeah, I mean, the low point was probably Clinton-Dole, you know, and it's more than twice as much as that. But,
wow.
But, I mean, so it was an election that got made news out of all proportions. It was also covered in a different way than the previous campaigns, and I'd like to talk about that in a bit. But let me make the third point third, which is even though it was shaping up to be the most newsworthy election by a lot up until the summer— when the economic crisis hit, actually the economy trumped politics.
Really? So the whole market meltdown became even a bigger story than Obama versus McCain.
And that's the really interesting thing when you compare how the TV news covered the campaign versus the cable channels covered the campaign. The newscasts switched and made the most newsworthy thing being what's happening to our economy. If you stayed on cable, watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, they were dealing with politics and they weren't dealing with economics.
Weren't dealing with the economy
yeah.
as much. So that was a big divide. I mean, where did you see, in terms of the influence, now we know that the audience
yes.
for network news is half of what it was for those evening newscasts, and it's really old from when you started doing this. What's happened? What about the actual influence? Do those nightly newscasts have as much influence as they once did, or is that dropped with their audience?
Well, what's happened in the last 20 years, the impact on the nightly newscast is a symptom of what's happened to all journalism in the last 20 years, all media in the last 20 years, which is everything has got more fragmented. 20 years ago, you were still in the ages, the end decades of the world of the mass media. Mass media, which started in after World War II, the era of Madison Avenue and networks, and you had major distribution channels which came from the top down, and the mass of people all watched the same thing. I mean, for instance, when I was a kid, remember, you used to have like the top 40. You
sure.
used to know what the song was in the top 40. People don't even know what the top 40 is now. Right? So music is fragmented, television is fragmented, movies are fragmented, journalism is fragmented, right? So what you have is the nightly news has got a lot less influence now than it used to have, but Time Magazine has a lot less influence now than it used to have. So the nightly news is not setting agendas in the way that it used to. Nothing is setting agendas in the way that it used to be set. So the good way of looking at the nightly news is it's still, if you want to know what this thing called the mainstream media is, what its agenda is, that's still a really good place to go to find out what is in the mainstream of the news agenda. The stories that they choose every night are going to be the same stories as the stories that are on the ticker on the bottom of CNN, or they're on the front page of the New York Times, or are going to be on the cover of the news magazines each weekend, or it's going to be on NPR and All Things Considered. They're going to be the same stories. So you're going to know what's on the mainstream news agenda by watching the nightly news. But because so many fewer people watch it, it's not got the influence. Like Katie Couric is no Walter Cronkite.
what I'm curious about too. I mean,
and her eyebrows aren't as big either.
No, they aren't. They aren't. Anyway, I want to get back and talk
yes.
a little bit about Katie Couric as mm-hmm. well. But you know, you talk about the top 40, and when you were a lad, you were a lad mm-hmm. in England, right?
I was a lad. I'm born and bred in England, and I fled to the Statue of Liberty in the mid 70s.
I have to say, you know, it's one of the things that's kind of is incredible about this whole about what you do. I mean, it's a little obsessive.
Yes, a little.
I'm trying, you know, I'm here with an Englishman. I'm trying to be polite.
You know, I'm a little obsessive. When I go to a baseball game, I keep a scorecard, okay?
Okay. Right. Well, you've kept a scorecard for 20 years. And this thing is so quintessentially American, these three nightly newscasts. Mm-hmm. How is it that you, this Englishman, comes to this country and this is basically your life work? How did you get there and why?
Well, I am a journalist by training and profession, so I was always interested in news man, right? But also, I discovered after working on a newspaper for 4 years that actually I was more interested in the impact of the news than I was in actually gathering the news myself. So I was more interested in being a news reader than being in a news gatherer. So I was really interested in what impact the news has in society. What stories get selected, what things make news and what things don't make news, and what people are interested in when they see the news.
But what really triggered that interest?
At the same time as I was interested in being a journalist working in journalism, this was in the mid-70s, early 80s, there was an awful lot of interest, in fact, in academic interest, in cinema studies. People were interested in movies, and a lot of the...
instead of making movies, they wanted to study them.
Studying movies, right. I mean, do you remember Jean-Luc Godard, for instance?
Sure.
There you have it. There were all sorts of interests about how movies make meaning, how they actually make sense, right? And I wanted to apply that to the mass media.
So why'd you come here?
Well, that's a personal story. That's. But anyway,
what was her name? And I hope she was worth it.
I've lived in New York City since 1976, and I started doing the Tyndall Report in the late 80s. So basically, I had a 10 years to scope out the cultural scene in the United States before deciding that it was the television news, that I was most interested in. The reason it actually was able to happen in the late 80s was two inventions that weren't around in the 70s. One was the VCR, and up until that point, if you wanted to have any television on tape, you had to have a reel-to-reel machine in the basement of a social studies department of a university. Ordinary people couldn't tape television up until the mid-80s. Second thing you had was the invention of the personal computer. If you wanted to make your own database and tabulate things and measure them and that sort of thing, again, you had to have a mainframe at your disposal. In the mid-80s, the personal computer got invented.
So basically, the PC and the VCR made the Tyndall Report possible.
Absolutely. And they were the first few things, they were the start of the things that killed off the networks. Now, what about that as an irony?
There's a great irony there. I mean, I seem to remember back in the day you used to use something that's probably a museum piece now, a Timex.
Texas Instrument. It was a glorified adding machine.
You're right. So, how did you figure you were gonna report there was in this data? I mean, did the light bulb go off? I understand that the equipment came into being,
right,
that allowed you to do this,
right,
but did the light bulb go off? Were you having a glass of wine one night and thinking, boom, the Tyndall Report?
There was, before I invented the Tyndall Report, there were people who were interested in measuring the news for their own proprietary reasons. So people inside the networks were interested in measuring what the competition was doing, seeing trends and that sort of thing. And there are businesses, especially in the local news business, where people were set up giving advice on, you know, how to structure an 11 o'clock half-hour newscast, how much news versus weather versus sports, and those sort of things. So that was in the air at the time. Right?
Gotcha.
What wasn't in the air at the time was making these insights available to the public.
I see.
So beforehand, all the people who were doing it for proprietary reasons, for commercial reasons. And I thought, being a journalist, this is information that would be actually of general interest.
Gotcha. Interesting. Open it to the public.
Yeah.
We're talking to Andrew Tyndall of the Tyndall Report. This is Max Media here at the Paley Center for Media. I'm Max Robbins. Andrew, so you saw both an opportunity to kind of pull back the veil on this, to make what these newscasts were about, the process of it, more transparent, as well as a business opportunity.
Absolutely. And the business opportunity was actually generating this database and actually producing trend information and monitoring information, which could actually quantify the impressions that people have. I mean, it's all very well people saying, there's too much fluff and human interest, or they're not covering these parts of the world enough, or this political campaign is got stuck on the horse race and is not engaged in issues. If you measure it, you can actually answer those questions and prove it,
rather than just based on impressions. There's been an increase in how much the newscasts are covering international issues, or a decrease in their focus on whatever, the economy, on race.
Absolutely. And I've now got a 20-year-old database where you can actually see those trends in coverage, and you can see when global issues have ebbed and flowed in terms of the consciousness of the mainstream media, when politics has been hot. What about crime? Is there a crime wave at the moment in the media or not? What about healthcare? What about the economy, all the environment, all of these type of issues?
So there's a real way to do it. And basically, I mean, you know, the news junkies like me, I mean, we're interested in this stuff. We'll take the time. We'll go to, you know, TyndallReport.com and take a look at your information and whatnot. But who are your clients? Who wants this?
Okay. For the longest time when I was doing this, as an inside industry publication. So I would sell my database actually to the research departments at the networks. And then people like you, for instance, when you were working in the trade press, when you were working at Variety, you'd be interested because a story would come in about what the goings on inside the network news operation.
They're cutting foreign bureaus.
And you call me up to fact check to see if the public relations people were telling you the truth or whether they were spinning their content in a way that didn't make sense. Anyway, I did that for a long time. 15 years of the Tyndall Report has been concerned with targeting an inside industry audience. And then a second light bulb went off about 4 years ago when I said, you know, the media are changing and it's no longer what we said earlier about there being a mass media and a top-down media. Right. One of the changes that's happening is people want to control their own media now. They don't want to have it spoon-fed or an agenda being set by those on high. They want to have access. They want to be able to search for things on Google, to look things up, et cetera, et cetera. So what I decided to do about 4 years ago was I decided to revamp the Tyndall Report and make it not for
which really had been a weekly newsletter.
Weekly inside industry newsletter, right? Now I decided to make Tyndall Report a service for television viewers rather than for people whose business it was to know about television. In other words, you can make your own news by going to the Tyndall Report. Make your own newscast. You're still taking advantage of the enormous resources of the networks in terms of news gathering, using their video facilities, their editing, their correspondence. But if you now go to the Tyndall Report, you can actually search and get your own choice of video. You can have your own interest in the topic that you're interested in. And my database now has more than 10,000 different news stories that have appeared on the Network Nightly Newscasts. And you can go and search my database and you can click on any of those and you can actually see the actual report. You don't have to tape it yourself. You don't have to TiVo it yourself. You don't have to go and look for it yourself. My database has it available for you. You just have to search that database and you can find the story.
So in other words, for example, if I wanted to do an essay about the evolution of television coverage of the nightly newscasts of the war in Iraq or the war on terror.
Yeah.
Boom. All those pieces from the last.
Well as I say, I decided to make this change 4 years ago. So the database is now 2.5 years old. It's already got 10,000 pieces. So I would advise you, if you wanted to do it, do an essay on the Barack Obama campaign in the primary season, because then every single story about the primaries of last year, the first half of last year, you search on Barack Obama, every time he tried to do something during the campaign, you get a description. I give you the description of what happened in each story, but also you can play each one. So if you want to know what sound bites were used or when the peaks and troughs of coverage were, you can go to TyndallReport.com and you can find out the history of Barack Obama's rise to power.
Very interesting. This is Max Media. We're talking with Andrew Tyndall, probably the leading, not probably, the leading analyst of broadcast news. Andrew, that brings me to another point. You made this evolution, and it was kind of in looking around at what was happening in terms of the Google, the digital universe.
Yes.
We talked a little bit earlier, too, about how we're in this kind of narrow casting environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that has meant the influence of these network nightly newscasts has waned a bit, and more than a bit, some would argue. How come you haven't expanded out? How come you haven't looked at just this whole world of cable news, of the whole landscape that makes so much noise, where a lot of people are getting their news and information, or getting their opinions validated.
There you are. I think that you hit, in your question, you hit the nail on the head. If you actually look at 24 hours of Fox News Channel, 24 hours of MSNBC, less so with CNN, but even to extent with CNN, if you actually look at 24 hours of those channels, you do not get, even in 24 hours, the well-rounded coverage of the world that you get on the nightly newscast.
Is that really, I mean, really, even if you're looking during the day, because I watch, for example, you know, Shep Smith's report on the Fox News, or a lot of times with what Wolf Blitzer is doing with his the Situation Room on CNN. And those are newscasts. They're package pieces. They're talking about what's going on in the world. You know, CNN does use its reach around the globe to talk about issues not just that are happening here domestically, but in Afghanistan or Pakistan or in India, where have you.
Right. The vast majority of the coverage of the cable news channels is opinion and interview and commentary about the news rather than source news gathering. That's the most of the time you're watching either interviews or argument and analysis of the news. That's the first thing. Second thing, the news agenda on the cable channels is rigidly skewed towards the major stories of the day. So, in other words, they'll go on and on and on about the three major stories of the day rather than attempt
to... Or what they've decided to be the most important stories of the day.
Absolutely. And the third thing is, because you have... if you have a 24-hour cable channel, one of the things you've got to worry about all the time is people who've just tuned in the last 20 minutes. So you can't go... in a direction on a news story, starting from the beginning and go on and on and on, without repeatedly coming back to recap what the headlines are. Because someone might have tuned in the last 20 minutes and they've missed the headlines, and you're going to be giving them a lot of detail about the story without them knowing the basic bare-bones facts. So if you watch a lot of a cable channel during the day, you get a lot of repetition, the same half-dozen pieces of information being repeated at a half-hourly or a 20-minute basis. And the depth is... the depth of reporting is really hard to get. A lot of the techniques of cable channels are live stand-ups by correspondents. They don't actually let them very much go out into the field to do reporting. A lot of the time, they've got to be standing up there every half hour in order to update you on the story, where they just repeat the bare facts of it.
But don't you think some kind of content analysis of that would be valid and would really there be a market for it and some interest in it?
I just because I've chosen to do the thing I've done, I'm not saying there should be a ban on someone else doing something else. The people are absolutely free to look at what the cable channels do. I made the decision when I decided to go online with the Tyndall Report and make the news coverage available by search to my viewers. Which has got, at the end of the day, which has got the higher quality production values, which is the go-to place if you want to see one two-minute package about how the stimulus bill is going to be passed or what the unemployment situation is or some international story about what's going on in the Gaza Strip or something like that. If you want to have one go-to piece to go to, the quality and the nightly newscast is still at least as high, maybe even higher than the quality that you get on the cable channels. Especially, I mean, if you compare NBC News and its nightly newscast to MSNBC on its primetime viewing, there's very little original reporting on MSNBC compared to what you've got on NBC Nightly News. Most of the tape pieces you have on, for instance, on Keith Olbermann on MSNBC are rerun pieces from the Nightly,
Nightly News. Interesting.
So it's not either or. Sometimes it's both and.
This is Max Media. We're talking to Andrew Tyndall today, the leading analyst of the broadcast news business. Andrew, along those lines, though.
Yes, sir.
You've been able to keep this obsession, if you will, alive for 21 years.
And aspersions about my mental health don't reflect very well on you, since you're my friend. What are you doing hanging out with a mad person?
Takes one to know one, I guess. But I will say that, but do you see this? I mean, you and I have been in this dance for a long time.
Yes,
you
sir.
Doing your research on it. I've been reporting on it. And how many stories have you've been interviewed about the death of the nightly newscast. Mm-hmm. And that drumbeat has been steady for almost as long as you've been in this business.
Okay, let's be serious about this rather than make flippant comments about one's mental stability. No, I mean, people ask me about this, and I say, you know, they say, what's the future of television? And I say to them, television has been dead for 2.5 years now. You can mark the death of television to the rise of YouTube. Once YouTube got invented, we need no longer talk about television. We talk about video.
Right.
Now, television happens to be one medium on which video is seen, but the content to be interested in is video now. Now, and we will watch in the future, we'll watch our video on our TVs, on our satellite dish cable,
on our iPhones,
on our wristwatches, on our laptops, wherever.
On a friend's T-shirt.
Absolutely. in a little screen that's implanted in a microchip inside your brain. Okay, so what I insist is that now we're living in the world of video. Right. A good source of news video so happens to be the news divisions of the broadcast networks.
But they seem to be dying like the death of a thousand cuts. I mean, each year they lose about 1 million viewers. The average age is 61 years old.
You know, their broadcast loses the viewing. What they're gambling on is that their digital distribution is going to grow faster than their broadcast loses audience members.
In other words, they'll meet that point of inflection where that kind of echo chamber that goes out. Good example of that. You know,
yes.
Allow me for a second.
Yes.
One of the biggest interviews, most important interviews, I think we all could agree, during the White House race was Katie Couric's devastating interview with Sarah Palin.
Indisputable.
Now, probably about 6 or 7 million people, most of them older than 61.
Half of them older and half of them younger is the true statistic.
Thank you, sir. Watched that on the evening newscast.
Yes.
How many millions more watched it on YouTube or somewhere else?
I think there was a larger audience online than there was broadcast.
Right. Much broader audience as well.
Absolutely. And interestingly, an audience that CBS didn't have to market to create—that was a viral audience. If there's something online that is interesting, the user is the one that markets it to their friends. I have two friends, and they have two friends, and so on, and so on, and so on. A viral audience is not marketed by the producer; it's marketed by the audience.
So they're really, in a way, much more so than ever before, the audience is defining what's going to be popular and what's important.
Absolutely. That's indisputable. However, somebody's got to make the original content. So the model for rating, the model for broadcast media, right, is the model of the ratings. The ratings says, what's the average size of the audience for every second that the newscast is on, that the broadcast is on? And your number of your 7 million means that in any given second, there are 7 million people watching a newscast. More will be watching some part or other of the entire newscast. But every second, they think that the number of people tuning out and the number of people tuning in averages out at 7 million. Now, online, averages, ratings, don't make any sense. Because an average is a very good measure when an audience is stable.
Right.
When you've got an audience which goes through violent peaks and troughs, the viral audience can be up in the millions. The everyday audience can be in the tens of thousands. Averaging out the tens of thousands with the millions just makes no sense because the average is you arrive at an average where nothing is seen by that average number, right? It's all either seen by fewer, which is the everyday programming, or it's seen by many, many, many more, which is the viral programming. So, the whole concept of ratings or, you know, audience size and that sort of thing disappears into meaninglessness as we go from a broadcast medium to a viral medium.
This is Max Robbins. This is Max Media from the Paley Center. Thanks again, Andrew.
Well, thank you, Max. I'm off to see my psychiatrist right now.
All right. Good luck there.
You've been listening to Max Media, a production of the Paley Center for Media in New York City. We're or on the web at paleycenter.org. That's P-A-L-E-Y center.org. And you can reach us by email at maxmedia@paleycenter.org.